And George, you're with us. Let's take phone calls with George as we talk about his work on the economy, time machines. I still got to get into this machine with him and see how this is going to work. And then we'll get your calls on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you, along with George Uhr. George, so with this apparatus, what would it look like to create the sound and the misting that you think you need for time travel?
Well, yeah, that begins to be a problem. This is where the project gets a bit convoluted because it's the instrumentation that is the problem, George.
Is it doable?
I don't know. See, that's the challenge of it.
Uh-huh.
You remember all of those interviews you've done where people talk about seeing ghosts and so forth. They talk about a temperature change. So if you're going to play in this stuff, you might want to be looking at temperature. Compasses spin. You've got to look at compasses. Many of these reports of anomalous behavior, bending of space-time, or whatever it is, there's some metal involved, so you've got to have some metal hanging around for possible attachment by whatever forces there are. Visible light spectrum has to be the right color, I think. Sound phase control, yeah. If you go to YouTube and search for acoustic levitation, you'll find a lot of pictures of things floating around on sound clouds, basically. And so over a period of you know, 6 months or so, I've been working on the idea, how would you know that you had bent space-time in a meaningful way? Because it's almost like an event horizon. Very difficult instrumentation problem.
What if you screw up like they did with the Philadelphia experiment and it sends you someplace and you can never get back?
Well, wherever you are, you can call home. You know?
No, not if there's no home to call.
Well, that's true. I'm not terribly worried about that, George. I expect if there's any indication in the instrumentation of anything anomalous beginning to happen, if the compass spins or if a light transmissibility indicator begins to change, or if local phase locked oscillators begin to change their phase relationship, and this happens in a high density sound field up around 100 to 110 dBm, then yeah, at that point, you have to sit back and say, when do I unplug it? Do I keep going? And really the part where it gets unplugged is if I can get the sound figured out to begin to materialize a cloud. When you start getting into the cloud game, okay, that's when you document everything you've done, write down all the science you can think of, document the logic track that got you to that, and then push it off to somebody with more time and resource.
Well, I know if Lisa calls your home to try to book you for a show and your wife says, we don't know where he is, we're going to know something happened.
Well, she'll be with me.
Oh, great. Poor lady.
Yeah, Elaine will just leave the breadcrumbs behind, dear, as we walk into this.
Let's go to the phones. Blair in Sedona, Arizona. Hi, Blair. Welcome to the program.
Hey, thank you, George. Hey, by the way, George, at your feet, do you have an electric heating console that illuminates colorfully as if it were a fireplace during these winter months in St. Louis?
I do not. I am in a cave that is as chilly as it gets.
Son of a gun. Well, anyway, you got a warm heart, so thank you, sir.
All right, thank you.
Mr. Uhr, I just finished a book by a former Wall Street hedge fund trader by the name of Sam Polk called For the Love of Money. It was copyrighted in 2016, and he took sort of a sour, dim view on hedge funds, and he was a hedge funder. And he basically said wealth is the only distinguishing feature. Guys get rich on Wall Street without doing anything different than other people who come before them. And he sort of feels like if civilization as we know it ended, derivative traders, distressed loan trading specialists, hedge fund guys would be obsolete. I was wondering, what's your opinion on the hedge fund situation in this country?
Well, personally, I think we have far too much of a financial industry to really support a healthy economy. We're in a position where what the world needs is a revaluation so that we don't work so hard to push diminishing returns. In other words, if I can get a smartphone that weighs 1 ounce less, is that worth throwing away 70 million of them that have been made already?
Good point.
And so the problem is not just that financial engineering has become almost agrarian in terms of their job is not to make jobs. Their job is of a financial engineer is not to do right or, you know, pursue art, justice, or human values. Their job is simply to grow money, and they're pretty good at it. I mean, I'm terribly impressed. The Federal Reserve is feeding into it. In their latest money stocks measure, they're increasing the amount of M1 at the 90-day extrapolated out over a year rate of 10.4%. So that's, of course, going to support an expanding market. But financial engineers, Warren Buffett said it best, I think, and I'll paraphrase because I don't remember his exact quote, but he said, in a previous lifetime, I'd be dinosaur food. And that's where everybody goes. I mean, at some point, if we all have 3D printers and can print and grind out our own printed circuit boards at home, and we don't need to have this long chain economy we've got, what happens to financial engineering? It could go the way of buggy whips.
It could. You never know. Dolores in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Hi, Dolores.
Hi, George. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
George, I forgot your last name. I called in or tuned into the radio.
His name is George. George Ure.
George Ure. Thank you, George Ure. I'm very interested in the word cloud, and in Skyping, that term is used. Also, in Transfiguration, the story in the scriptures, Matthew, Mark, and Luke, all refer to a cloud coming upon the disciples. And that talks about information and knowledge that is imposed upon the witnesses.
Yeah.
So maybe if you want to go to Matthew, Mark, and Luke and read what the scripture says there and then relate it to this cloud that's mentioned in the program of Skyping, you'll see some similarities between the two fields.
Well, thank you. I will expand the research out that way. What really got me thinking about it was Moses going up into the cloud.
The cloud, that's right.
And coming back with his face shown, which that says something big happened up there. And when you couple it with other references in other doctrines to clouds, not just Christian, not just Jewish, but other religions mention clouds as well. So we don't know what it is, but those points where clouds are referenced, you'll usually find something else in the vicinity, noise, smoke, food, which might be involved with smoke, we don't know, and sometimes offerings, blood of animals, and so forth. My thinking is that it's almost like a kindling process where you begin with very small, perhaps nanoparticles or even a particular level of humidity in the atmosphere. And those exact things allow a cloud, a super cloud, to appear. We just don't know how to do it in a repeatable scientific manner. Which is why the instrumentation, because, you know, we keep coming back to, okay, so if I think I'm making a cloud, how would I instrument that?
How did the verbiage of the cloud even start, George?
It came really from reading Bruce Gernon's second book with McGregor. Those guys did a great job, and but my brain doesn't work like most people's. I'm an extensibility-oriented kind of guy, and I understand very well that people's language is very imprecise, and people generalize. For example, Bruce, in his experience, calls it the electronic fog. But when you generalize fog, that's something in the air obscuring vision. Well, that's very similar to smoke, and that's very similar to cloud. So you linguistically, you've got a spectrum of obscured vision occurring, and that's what I am taking my cue from, trying to understand what the similarities are across these events that would trigger something.
Let's go to Joe in Spartanburg, South Carolina. Joseph, welcome to the program.
Gentlemen, good evening. George, I want to tell you, for years I thought I was insane. And I heard what you said on the show. I'm a professional truck driver by trade. And it brought back the memory from 25 years ago. Time travel. We used to make jokes about we got kidnapped by aliens. But a lot of what you said happened that night 25 years ago.
Yep.
Me and three of my friends were traveling from Kingston, New York to Beacon, New York. We left Kingston at midnight. Now, we were driving south on I-84. It was a clear night, early spring. It started getting foggy. We were listening to the radio. It was one of those radios where the lights ran through different colors. Well, out of nowhere, we started smelling like a burnt air tank. We didn't think nothing about it. But we arrived in Beacon 1 hour before we left Kingston.
Whoa.
And to this day, we still cannot explain how that happened.
Okay, now George, don't go away, because I've got to ask you three or four questions. First, when these kinds of reports happen, typically it is on early interstate highway.
With minimal traffic.
You know, minimal traffic, but also expansion joints about every 25 to 30 feet, depending on which state you're in. Was there a thump, 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 thump regularly as you came along on that route?
Yep,
he said so. It was on Interstate I-84, and there were constant thumps, like every 20 or 30 seconds, thump, 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 thump.
Yeah. Perfect. Because, see, in Dimensions Next Door, one of the things I talk about is the importance of those kettle drums arranged in a semicircle to provide a, George, it's almost like a sync pulse that the drum is involved with. And see, that's where, that. Fortunately, I've got Garratan World Instruments, so I can kind of sample different sounds. But it's, how did that happen? He had a thump, thump, thump going. And so, again, that's the kind of thing that you also get a thump, a physical thump. When a propeller rotates, you get a blast of air that hits the windshield as well as the panels, especially on the left side of the aircraft. So, fascinating report. Thank you.
And how do you explain the missing time, George?
That's not mine to explain. I'm just trying to figure out how to engineer into a cloud. Once we can reliably call clouds with a combination of sounds, thumps, and suspended particulates. Again, I'm generalizing. You know, you've got burnt offerings, you've got smoke, you've got incense, but that. As a class, that's suspended particulate.
Let's go back to Joe in Spartanburg for another quick question. Joe, were you all baffled when this happened?
Sorry?
Were you all baffled when this happened?
Yes. Like I said, we thought we got kidnapped by aliens. To this day, we joke about it. I haven't thought about it in 25 years. And so when you said the difference in the changing color of the light, the mist, the smell of something burning, and then the constant thump, and then boom.
There
it
he is.
Hits you like a ton of bricks.
Something happened to them, George.
No question in my mind. That's absolutely believable. And it's consistent, George. When people have those incidents, that's, I've always suspected one of the reasons that much of the national highway system is being repaved, especially in Oregon, for example, where you have these long, empty areas of highway. They're taking out expansion joints so that you don't have that thump, thump, thump. Now, is that because it's better highway and we have to spend money on it? Or is somebody worried we're going to figure out there is a thump, thump and a, some other noise that might empower people? And that's the whole point of this series of experiments.
So tell me a little bit more about your anti-aging work.
Oh, yes, that. Well, there was an article in Nature recently, and I don't know if you saw it, but what was cool about it was Nature had an article. It was the September 5th edition of this year, and the headline was First Hint That Body's Biological Clock Can Be Reversed. Now, it's a very small study. It was about, I think, 9 people in California participating in it. They measured their telomere length. Telomeres are, think of it as your DNA.
Mm-hmm.
And as you age, the ends of your DNA basically wear out from replication. So what they did is they took 3 things, human growth hormone, metformin, which is a...
It's a glucose pill.
Yeah, it's a glucose controlling pill for diabetics. And the other thing they took was DHEA. So the DHEA and all of that combined to actually seem to lengthen their telomeres, which ain't supposed to happen. Now, so that's one thing we're doing, although we don't have human growth hormone. So we're pushing our bodies to create that through nutrition. And you can do that, according to some, by taking GABA and you also take the DHEA. And then there are berberines. And berberines are very similar in effect for controlling glucose. And so that's one track. The next track is there is some very exciting work that's been done in C60 fullerenes. C60 is a complex buckyball form of carbon. And what it does is it acts like a super high persistence antioxidant, and it seems to have some positive effect on people facing cognitive decline. This is not medical advice. You can go out and read on it. And then the other thing that I'm working on now is using the near-infrared and also the deep infrared.
And again, there's a lot of stories on that. We're going to come back and take final phone calls with George Ure in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Next hour, investigative reporter Cheryl Jones joins us with some amazing stories from Fate magazine. So I'm looking forward to that. The final hour will be conversations with Cheryl. We'll take your phone calls during basically an open line format for her right here on Coast to Coast AM. When we come back with George Ure, we'll talk more about his work. If you want to check in with us on how you think 2020 will go, make your own little mini predictions. We'll be doing a lot of that next week during our New Year's Eve and New Year's Night program as well. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you, along with George Ure. His website's urbansurvival.com and peoplenomics.com, linked up for you at coasttocoastam.com. What do you see, George, as our most pressing issue in 2020?
Well, there are really two. One of them is resolving the great national divide. I've been around for a long time, and I have never seen the country as divided as it is right now. People are angry. I mean, picking fights and
on either side.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. I mean, it's like Eric Hofer's book about true believers has been read by both sides, and everybody's nuts. And so that's one problem we have. Related to that is the problem of runaway social media. We have an interesting problem there. It's become the modern Tower of Babel. You can't really trust what's there. You don't know when something goes viral if it's because someone's pushing an agenda, retweeting, reposting. The world is becoming less real and more, more virtualized.
Iran is going to shut down parts of its internet because of that very problem.
And Russia's in the process of controlling its internet access. And China got there first with a great firewall of China. And it looks like this is something I wrote about, 2012, that was bound to happen. That was my book, Broken Web, which is about the coming collapse of the internet. At some point, governments cannot allow people to have so much freedom that it becomes disruptive. I mean, freedom is a great thing, don't get me wrong. And no, I don't want to be the person who has to figure out how do we keep everybody able to speak their mind, but at the same time, social media is very much like putting people into a crowded theater.
Yes.
And so therein lies the problem.
And yelling fire.
Yeah, and passing matches out at the door. It's just really absurd. So just like buildings have occupancy permits, maybe that's one way to approach social media. I don't know the answer, George, but I can sure see that problem.
It's a tough situation.
It is. And the other problem, of course, is if the economy falls apart. I recently predicted on my subscriber side, the Peoplenomics side, based on how the charts are looking so far, there is a case that Bitcoin could drop under 4,000 and it's 7,152 at the moment.
Are you saying, though, there could be a crash with the economy?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And what percent do you give that?
Oh, 40, 45%.
Oh, that's not high.
Well,
60,
like
70 is high.
45% dead is what?
It's 45% dead.
Yeah, and you don't do any breathing when you're 45% dead. And that's the problem with the economy. The first problem is, will it hang together? Financial engineering is doing its best to keep the illusion going that everything is just fine and dandy. And yes, the Trump Make America Great Again has been a good rallying cry. Putting our foot down on trade, don't have a problem with that because we have been suckers in trade for a long time. On the other hand, we have this divisiveness problem, and it's going, it not will be used against us, but it could be used against us by people who would like to further an agenda of reducing freedom.
Let's go to the phones again. Mary in Colorado Springs, Colorado. Hi, Mary. Good morning.
Hi. Can you hear me?
Uh-huh.
Okay. All right. When he mentioned earlier, your guest did, about Moses' face shining when he came off the mountain.
Yes.
Okay. There was also, this isn't in the Bible, but it's in some extra biblical books, like Jubilees, I think, and Yasher. When Noah was born, he was shining like that. He was born shining, and to the point of where his father thought maybe Noah was not his child, but a child of the giants.
And what is your point, though, about the shining?
I don't know what it is. Huh. I just thought it was strange that Moses had a shining face and Noah was shining.
They had that glow because they saw God, did they not, George?
That is the story. And it may actually be encapsulated in the term enlightened, because there are many references to light, enlightening, illuminated, and so forth, that there is a class or a type of person that shows up in history who does have unique genetic structures compared with I would say, average people.
Who do you think really tipped off Noah about the flood?
If I were guessing, I'd say a cloud.
A cloud?
Yeah.
Explain.
He heard the voice, right?
Yes.
Okay. The voice doesn't...
That also gave him pertinent instructions on what to make.
Right, right.
The ark.
When you hear that voice, it usually doesn't... It's not, in pilot terms, George, it doesn't seem to be a clear air phenomenon. Sort of like, you know, yeah, there is clear air turbulence. Did Noah pick that up, or was there a cloud talking to Noah? We just don't know. I mean, the data's not deep enough to draw any conclusions.
Let's go to San Bernardino, California. Ezekiel is with us. Hi, Ezekiel.
Hey, sir. How you doing?
Good.
George, honored to be on with you. Mr. Year, I was listening. I tuned in late because I'm getting off of work. But your whole thing about clouds, I wanted to share about a strange, very insane incident that happened to me as a kid in Brooklyn, New York, when I was growing up. In 92, 93, around this winter time, my family was relaxing at home when my sister noticed there was a buzzing, like of almost like bees in our apartment, and it vibrated throughout the whole building. And our neighbors and us, we ran upstairs to the rooftop, and from Brooklyn, New York, we could see over the Manhattan skyline on a clear winter night. And the only way I could describe it was there was a planet-sized craft in the skyline of New York City. And this thing was huge. It covered everything from the horizon to the zenith. And it had a huge antenna sticking out of it with an orb shining at the end of it. And the strange thing was when we got out there, eventually the buzzing had stopped. But this humongous object just slowly disappeared into a cloud. For I'd say over an hour, almost an hour and a half, we stood there just taking photos and videos of this thing.
We get lots of reports about UFOs going into clouds, George.
Yeah, and not surprisingly, the idea at the root of what I'm working on is the notion that when you begin to tunnel out of space-time, the cloud, I don't know what the cloud is, whether it's a drop in air pressure or just what comprises the cloud. But it's likely related to standing waves of sound in some manner. And that's why the cloud that this gentleman saw may not have been visible to anyone else in a couple of blocks away. I don't know if you've ever been in a recording studio and tuned a recording studio for standing waves at different sound frequencies, but you can actually turn on a smoke generator and see where sound waves are stacking up in corners and so forth, where you need to put in acoustic baffling. And so there's much to suggest when you begin generalizing lots of these reports that sound figures into it and there are standing waves involved.
I'm still convinced that the blocks that built the pyramids were moved by sound resonance.
No question in my mind about that. The Deng Shen trumpets used in Tibet in concert with drums, it's probably a lost technology. Yet another reason to keep pursuing this stuff. Because the same standing waves that levitate things in a laboratory can work with more basic human-powered instruments.
Betty sends an email about the laser diodes that you've worked on. How many are effective?
The best ones, in my opinion, and I'm this ain't medical advice, right?
Right, you can't give that.
Exactly.
You're not a doctor.
Would be in the 700 nanometer range.
What's that mean?
Deep red. Deep red.
And how many lights is that? 20, 50, 100? What?
Oh, I'm sorry. In terms of the number, you don't need a large number of lights. You can do it with a fairly small number, like you know, a few dozen.
And you just hold it on you?
Yeah. One way I've done it that my wife and I use is I got a skateboarding helmet, right? Ripped the padding out of it, and then got one of those 15-foot long 660 nanometer red rope lights from Amazon and just glued it on the inside.
Huh.
And, you know, so it's got 15 feet of red light.
Sure. Right around the inside. And they don't get hot either, do they?
Yeah, they get warm after about 15 minutes or so, but that's all the longer you want to use it. The ideal, you'll have to do some research online, but you want about 4 joules is the amount of energy you're trying to get to the surface of the skin. I've seen as high as 4.6, but 4 would be on the conservative side.
George, I wanted to get your take on North Korea. We haven't talked about that yet tonight. North Korea continues to boast and threaten that we were going to get some kind of Christmas gift. Everybody speculated it was going to be some kind of projectile missile launch. Nothing has happened yet. What do you think?
I think it's a failing regime that is just trying to, you know, that they're suffering basically from the same syndrome as social media. They're craving attention. We live in an attention-starved world because everybody's talking and nobody's listening.
But he's a troubled guy, and he may have a nuke.
Yeah, that's true. And if he does and uses it, he'll be a vaporized guy. So I'm not anxious for anyone to use nuclear weapons, but that's one of those things that if you dare to do it, you don't want to be around when retribution comes because payback's a what?
Yep, you can't say that on the air either.
No, and I didn't. I was very careful, Mr. Norrie.
Yes, because we're ready to beep you at any moment.
I've been very good.
Did you ever see the movie It's a Wonderful Life, George?
Long, long ago. I know that's one of your favorites.
One of my favorites. Watch it every year. I got to get my fix. And your name is George. I'm George. George Bailey was Jimmy Stewart in the movie. One of those old-time classics. Do you believe in angels?
Actually, I do. There's no question in my mind that there are non-local beings, some good, some not so good.
Well, there's no question about that, but there's also lots of evil on this planet, isn't there?
Yeah.
And I think you kind of hinted about that.
Yeah. The big problems, I think, need to be solved first. And getting rid of evil, well, I won't get into politics.
Tell us more about your book, Dimensions Next Door.
Still available on Amazon. I've got another one that should be out, and I'm hoping next month or two.
What will that be called?
The 100-Year Toaster.
The 100-Year Toaster?
Yes, it's how the world has run off the rails because of planned obsolescence. There's no reason we all need to work so hard. We are in a world, George, where we are maximizing profits at the expense of the environment, and we are wasting our lives instead of thinking. We're scrambling to buy disposable goods. And there are alternatives, but it requires a major rethink.
What do you think of 5G that we're heading for?
I'm not thrilled about it because it's a higher duty cycle. In other words, the amount of on time and the bandwidth is higher. And I'm not comfortable using old style cell phones for LTE. And so I have no incentive to go to 5 as long as 4 still works and I turn them off and stay out of the room they're in.
Heck, you probably still have a rotary phone at home, don't you?
You don't?
No.
Yeah, I do.
All right. I knew that. How did I know that?
Oh, well, it's just because I'm a back-to-basics guy. I mean, we live on 30 acres in the middle of nowhere for a reason.
Well, you're the urban survivalist, my friend. So keep in touch with us, George. Let us know when the new book comes out, okay?
I will, George. Thank you so much.
Looking forward to a great 2020. His website's urbansurvival.com. Peoplenomics.com, linked up for you at coasttocoastam.com. Up next, investigative reporter Cheryl Jones joins us with some amazing stories. And then in our last hour, conversations with Cheryl, your phone calls.